Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ and East County Magazine, and my newsmaker today is John Chua Kwek. John is with the La Maestra Community Health Center. He is the past chairman and a current board member of the South Sudanese Community Center as well. John came here as a refugee from the Sudan, and he has spent many years helping other refugees coming to America. So he's going to be talking about those experiences as well as a very exciting benefit event coming up for the community. Welcome, John, to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Tell us about when you first came to America and what the experience was that forced you to leave your homeland.
I came to the United States in 1995, and I went to Salt Lake City, Utah. That was my first city in San Diego, and then in America that I lived in.
Now, you grew up in a village in the Sudan.
Yes.
And what happened there that forced you and your family to leave?
Well, Sudan been in civil war that took more than 50 years. And that civil war devastated our villages. And it came to my own village where I escaped from that village. I ran out and found myself in a refugee camp in Ethiopia.
Was your village actually attacked?
My village was attacked, yes.
So you had no choice? You and your family
had
to leave?
I had no choice, yes. To run.
So did your entire family go to the refugee camp, John?
Yes.
Yes.
My mom and my two sisters came with me to refugee camp in Ethiopia.
From there, eventually you made your way to America, mm-hmm. to the first Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. And what was the transition like there when you first got your apartment there? How difficult was that?
It was very difficult, Miriam. When we first came to our own apartment, one-bedroom apartment in Salt Lake City. My sponsor thought that I knew everything because I spoke English when I first came here. Mm-hmm. He brought us in and said, John, here's your home and, you know, see you tomorrow. So everything from using the stove to cook was brand new to us. We couldn't eat that night because we could not really figure out how to use that stove to cook.
So you didn't eat the first night?
We didn't
night
eat the first night.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, until the next morning around 9 to 10, mm-hmm. when my caseworker came back to us, mm-hmm. and found out that we did not eat last night.
So these things that we all take for granted,
yeah,
here are things,
yeah.
that have to be taught to, mm-hmm. people that are coming, mm-hmm. from an entirely different culture.
Because myself, as well as any other refugee who came from East Africa, mm-hmm. basically from Sudan, let me not really generalize East African, but from Sudan.
Now, you told me your mother used to cook outdoors,
yes,
with firewood.
Yes, with firewood, mm-hmm. and charcoal.
So you didn't know how to work a gas stove.
No, not at all. It was brand new to us.
When you came to San Diego, how was that transition?
I lived in Salt Lake for 1 year before, mm-hmm. I came to San Diego. When I came here, I learned enough to use, you know, gas stove and, you know, electric stuff. Mm-hmm. And I resumed my education in San Diego, and that was the first thing I did when I came. I was 26 when I came.
26, okay.
Because I lived in a refugee camp for more than 6 years.
So you were fortunate you were able to get an education. And
I was.
I understand that congratulations are in order, that you've just received your PhD.
Thank you, yes. Mm-hmm. And if I did not really decide to come to San Diego, I would probably not get this education.
So that's really an American success story.
Yeah. Summer of 1997, that's when I first resumed my education, mm-hmm. in ESL program here.
Now, so, you've also authored a book called South Sudanese Community Insights, Cross-Generational, Cross-Cultural Rescue Model. Tell us about that.
I wrote that book out of my profession as a marriage and family therapist, mm-hmm. intern now. I became a trainer or educator for the community, whereby I travel around the United States to where South Sudanese people live, and I educate them how they can live together with their families, how, you know, this manly feeling that Sudanese men have when, mm-hmm. they first came here have to be let go, at least just for them to live together. Let go some of their, you know, pride as men and, thing like that.
And that must be a difficult thing. I know you yourself have literally the scars across your forehead that are a sign of the coming of age of a young man of 15 in the Sudan. And but these traditions are so different here.
Yes, it is. Everything is different here. Because in Sudan, people live their life the way they want, you know, the way that generations came along. So when people come here, they have to adjust to fit in the law here. So some of the tradition cannot be practiced here. And even some of the way they used to live their life, when man will sit there not cooking, women will do the cook and take care of kids, they have to let that go and work together.
So they need to learn to be a little more dependent.
Yes, yes.
Now, I understand that in the Sudan, some of the men have multiple wives.
Yes.
And when it comes time to come to America, what happens?
It devastated families, really. They couldn't really come with two or four wives.
Mm-hmm.
But some people came as sisters, and some came on their own. And when they came here, got themselves here, they tried to reunite.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't work.
Because polygamy is not legal.
Yeah, it's not really allowed here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what happens to all of the other family members then? How do they take care of themselves? What do they do?
They do, you know, they do take care of themselves and find themselves, you know, other partners.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do.
Fascinating.
Yes.
Now, how many people from the Sudan, and for that matter from other East African countries, have come here?
Yes.
We have a lot of refugees here in San Diego County.
Yeah.
How many are from these African areas?
Let me estimate. There will be a rough estimate. We did not have an accurate statistic yet, so we're going to do that as East African in San Diego. Sudanese are about 5,000 or more. I think Somali, I think, rank higher. There are around 10,000 people in San Diego. Ethiopian and Eritrean might be in close to Somali.
Mm-hmm.
So roughly, I think we are about maybe 30,000 in San Diego.
Are they mostly clustered in City Heights and the center city areas, or are some of them finding their way out here into East County communities?
City Heights is our center. So you find most of these people living in City Heights. However, everywhere in San Diego, from east, from south, the border, all the way to Escondido, to San Marcos area, east to East County. So we are everywhere.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about your book. I understand that you've identified different kinds of counseling models or programs that are culturally sensitive.
Yeah. When it comes to culture, you have to know that culture by living with these people so that you know them better.
Mm-hmm.
So just meeting someone, a person, will not really teach you a whole lot of that that culture. I thought that if I put together some of the cultural sensitivity and some of the belief and some of the traditions, and put that into a book, it will educate other people who are serving Sudanese, like, you know, providers, you know, mental health providers and even healthcare providers, as well as the South Sudanese themselves, to read it and see, hey, you know, these are the things we have and these are the things going on in this country and these are the issues, you know, facing the community. So I wrote that book purposely to educate South Sudanese, as well as other people who involve helping South Sudanese.
Yeah, the folks that are helping to serve them, the caregivers and social workers. And
social workers and counselors and mental health counselors, married family therapists. So that's how I put this book together, and it is very educational. It will teach you more than just how to help a Sudanese, but it will teach you how they live their life before they came to the United States.
Very good.
And things that change as a result of them being here.
Sounds like a fascinating book, John. Thank
you. It is. It is online. It's on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the South Sudanese Community Center, what its mission is, and what some of the exciting things are that you've got going through there.
South Sudanese Community Center in San Diego was established in 1996 to serve the South Sudanese refugee and immigrant from Sudan with education, you know, assistance, you know, for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been around for that long, and it has youth program, it has after school program. Now we have the elder program in the morning that they come in and do exercises, including yoga. We have also cultural folklore where kids come and their mom and dance and play music, traditional music.
So they're helping to keep their cultural traditions alive.
Yes, yes.
But what are some of the biggest challenges facing the refugees you're seeing coming here today?
Job is the number one challenge. because without a job, you know, family will not really live their life the way they want it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been very difficult for many of our people in San Diego to find jobs. Because of that, a lot of people left San Diego. They moved to Midwest and East Coast.
Interesting.
Yeah, to work in meat factories and or other factories.
Factories, sure.
Yes.
Now, you're also very involved with La Maestra. You are a marriage and family therapist intern there.
Yes.
Tell us about the mission of La Maestra and what they are doing to help the refugee community.
La Maestra was established in 1986, and that was way before I came to the United States. And the mission of La Maestra was to provide...
It started as an amnesty program.
Amnesty program. As a 501c3 nonprofit in Cedar Heights, to provide English as a second language and vocational classes, and to assist people in San Diego in applying for various legalization status. Because many students that joined La Maestra by then were not legally, you know, accepted to mm-hmm. live here. So amnesty program really helped them to get their legal status to stay in the United States.
Now, today, La Maestra is more known for the healthcare clinics that they run. I understand they have 5 of them now, a couple of them out here in East County. Tell us where those are located.
Our center is located in City Heights on Fairmont Avenue, corner of Fairmont and University Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
We have another clinic in National City. We have another one in Lemon Grove, another one in El Cajon City. We have a school-based clinics, too. We have one in Hoover High, one in Monroe, one in Central Elementary. That's what we're doing right now. We're trying to move to school to target youth and provide counseling for their...
And the community health clinics operate, for listeners out there who may be interested, they operate on a sliding scale. So this is for lower-income folks, but if you don't have Medi-Cal and you need some help getting medical care, La Maestra's clinics are a good source for that. You can find out more about them at lamaestra.org. Now, they have a big event coming up, and it's going to benefit, I understand, a generational center.
Generation program that we just created in the summer of 2013 was established to provide social health for senior residents in Cedar Heights with exercise classes, support group, computer classes, and more. In summer of 2013, that's when we will start this program. It's running right now. It also offers youth behavioral, preventive, and youth development services. Also job and skill training, self-recreation activities.
It sounds like a very worthwhile program.
It is.
Now, the event coming up is an international fashion show.
Yes.
It is going to be held on Friday, August 23rd from 11:30 in the morning to 2 p.m. at the RTC showroom, which is located at 4001 El Cajon Boulevard. And this is a fundraiser for culture and healing through arts programs at Generations. John, tell us about some of the things that people can expect to see and experience at this very unique event.
Wow. I would love to share with people that please come and witness that yourself. La Maestra is a very diverse employer and the biggest employer in Cedar Heights. We have 27 languages and dialects spoken by our staff.
Wow.
People are coming from 60 different countries around the world. So you name it, the culture, we have it. So we will demonstrate our cultural show,
mm-hmm.
whereby each country will show their tradition, traditional clothes they have, what is that for, and there will be a description for the clothes they're going to be showing. And different cultures around the world will be exhibited.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I understand it's going to showcase,
yes.
among other things, fashion, music, art, and cuisine from around the world.
Yes.
There will also be international art on display, a fashion bazaar where you can buy things if
mm-hmm.
you like the clothes you
mm-hmm.
see, and also some drawings for prizes.
Yes. It's going to be a lot of fun that day.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Now, how can people get more information about the event if they want to get reservations or tickets?
Yeah.
So you can find more information on the website at www.lamaestra.org, and that's spelled LAMAESTRA.org.
Yeah, correct. Thank you, Mariam, for being your guest today.
You're very welcome.
I hope that, you know, San Diego, you know, will take this opportunity to come over and see how diverse La Maestra is.
Very good.
So I'm so excited to be part of it and see people come in and see our cultures and tradition that day.
Well, very good. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM in Descanso.
Attention motorists. This is Miriam Raftery with a special alert for motorists this weekend. Getting to the South Bay area may prove a bit tricky. The 805 freeway will be closed in both directions from Sunday, August 18th at 3 o'clock to 5 a.m. on Monday, August 19th, between Route 54 and Route 905. This is to allow for construction and expansion of the 805 freeway, including access to a future transit center. Drivers are advised to use Interstate 5 or Toll Road 125, which will be free during the freeway shutdown.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's lineup of activities includes art, music, history, sports, nature, wine, and more. First up, the August 17th 6th Annual Heart of Mount Helix, with the emphasis on ART. This event, which runs Saturday night from 5:30 to 10 p.m., is a fundraiser to benefit the Mount Helix Park Foundation. The entertainment headliner is the Mighty and Untouchables. Other musicians featured are the Jan Connor Trio, Lillian Palmer, and David Maldonado. Besides the live music, there will be tastings from several well-known restaurants, visual art demonstrations, silent and live auctions, and a perfect sunset. Tickets for the 6th Annual Heart of Mount Helix event are pre-sale only. The Young Actors Theater is presenting Grease, which opens this weekend beginning on Friday and running through Sunday the 18th. It continues next weekend from August 22nd through the 25th at Encore Theater in Spring Valley, evoking Rydell High's senior class of 1959 in this rollicking musical. The shows are at 7 p.m. each day, with Saturday and Sunday 2 p.m. matinees. Tickets can be purchased online at yatsandiego.org. San Pasqual Winery is offering a paint and palette event on Wednesday, August 14th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Paint, sip, and enjoy. Find your inner Picasso as you paint and have a ton of fun. They provide everything you need, including a 16-inch by 20-inch canvas, supplies, art apron, and step-by-step instructions by a local artist. Just bring yourself, no art experience required. For more information and to reserve your space, go to paintandpalette.com. Also at the San Pasqual Winery's new tasting room on La Mesa Boulevard in La Mesa, enjoy live music featuring the Mercury Street Blues Band on Saturday, August 17th from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. They play a variety of music, jazz, blues, folk, and rock. Wine by the glass, cheese and crackers, and dessert are available. Seating is on a first-come, first-served basis. Mission Trails Regional Park in San Carlos will be hosting a summer twilight walk and owl prowl as dusk sets in on Saturday night, August 17th. Advance registration is required. Guests will gather at Bushy Hill parking lot across from the Kumeyaay Lake Campground entry. The walk begins at 7:30 p.m. and ends at 9:30 p.m. The Alpine Historical Society is holding their special presentation, Witness to Gettysburg, on August 18th from 2 to 3:45 p.m. at the Alpine Women's Club in Alpine. Miss Hattie Elizabeth Turner, played by Annette Hubble, tells how a town of 2,400 citizens coped with the 30,000 casualties following the epic Battle of Gettysburg. San Diego State University is set for Aztec Fan Fest, formerly known as Aztec Family Day, scheduled for Saturday, August 17th at Qualcomm Stadium. The event features Tailgate Town, a Fan Fest scrimmage, and a Meet the Team autograph session. Gates open at 3:30 p.m., and admission is free. The event begins with Tailgate Town, which includes appearances by San Diego State University players, coaches, and sponsors, as well as the San Diego State University Marching Aztecs and Cheer Team. At Cosmos Coffee Cafe in La Mesa, Jeff Berkeley and Jeffrey Joe will be performing on Thursday, August 15th at 7 p.m. Float in the pool while watching the family movie Brave this Wednesday, August 14th at the Salvation Army Croc Center. They call it Dive-In Movie. The movie begins at 7:30, and the first 50 guests will receive inner tubes. The Kroc Center is located on University Avenue in San Diego, just outside of La Mesa. Brouhaha Comedy has a comedy show every Wednesday at Haritna Mediterranean Restaurant on El Cajon Boulevard in La Mesa. The show runs from 7:30 to 9 p.m. This Wednesday's show features international headliner Kurt Swan, and the mixer starts at 6 p.m. with the show beginning at 7:30. On Tuesday, August 13th at 6 p.m., as part of their People Who Cook program, the Julian Public Library will be featuring frozen desserts with Jeff Jeremy from Jeremy's on the Hill. And a summer mixer where you can meet and greet with local businessmen and women in East County is hosted by the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce. The event is free for chamber members and $10 for non-members. The summer mixer will start at 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday, August 14th, at the Holiday Inn, 8000 Parkway Drive. All of these events and activities and more can be found in our festival and events section and in our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County.
Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Okay, we are back with another edition of Friday Fun Time. Today our contestants are Gray Feathers, Brooke, and Lynn. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. First question is, where in our region have weasels been popping up recently?
The city council?
The county jail?
Santee Lakes.
No. Good guesses. Let me give you some choices. Is it the Laguna Mountain, Lindo Lakes Park, the county administration building, or City Hall downtown?
Well, City Hall would be the first place I would look for weasels, but if we're talking about the four-legged kind, I would have to say somewhere near water.
You're close.
Lindo Lake.
Lindo Lakes Park. Brooke got it.
All right.
Next question. Who or what is a hoodoo?
Oh, that's something from New Orleans, I'm sure. There's hoodoos down there, yeah. Like a hoodoo there. Isn't that something like...
That's what you get the beads thrown at you for.
Okay. Actually, let me give you some choices. Is it a hookah pipe, a kumeyaay greeting, a teetering rock formation, or the latest teenage dance craze?
A kumeyaay rock formation.
All right.
It's a dance phrase. Dance craze. Doing the hoodoo.
I'm going to give that one to Lynn. It is a teetering rock formation. Not kumeyaay, but it's one of those rocks that we see in East County that are like an upside down triangle where it's eroded at the bottom and it's defying gravity, how these things stay up. But anyway.
All right.
Who'd have thought of that?
Okay, the city of La Mesa recently legalized something that has been illegal for many years.
Skateboards?
Marijuana. Skateboarding?
Skateboarding?
Nope. Not skateboarding.
Marijuana?
Nope.
Gay marriage?
Well, that's already legal in California now. No, let me give you some choices. Is it billboards, beekeeping, water recycling, or winemaking?
Beekeeping.
Chickens.
Winemaking. Winemaking.
Wow. Brooke got it. Winemaking it is, wow. Yes. The first winery in La Mesa has opened out there.
That's cool.
Okay, next question.
I'll drink to that.
What animals may soon be reintroduced to their native range locally in San Diego's inland region?
Grizzly bears.
Nope. Zebras?
Let's give you some choices. Grizzly bears was one of the guesses. Obviously, that's been ruled out. The ones that are left are gray wolves, wild horses, or California condors?
California condors.
Gray wolves.
One choice left.
It's wild horses, right? Yes, it's wild horses. I just read about that in the paper in East County Magazine just a couple days ago.
Well, all these answers
the Heritage
are found
Herd.
In East County Magazine, the Heritage Herd.
Right? The Heritage Herd,
yes.
That's right. Very interesting.
Okay, a couple more. What was recently found by East County Magazine's photographer Jim Pelley in the Ocotillo Desert?
Weasels.
flowers.
Well, they do have those out there, but that wasn't. Now, was it a missing person, a gold nugget, a dinosaur skeleton, or a giant multi-ton blade that fell off a wind turbine?
Well, I happen to know that answer, and it was a 200-foot-long blade off of a turbine that went flinging off into the desert.
You got it. That is right.
Unbelievable.
There you go. What civilization is older than the Kumeyaay Indians?
What? Would you repeat the question?
Name a civilization that's older than the Kumeyaay Indians. You baffled? I'll give you some choices.
Assyria.
Babylon? Assyria?
Was it the ancient Egyptians? The Chaldeans of Mesopotamia? The Roman Empire? Or none of the above?
None of the above.
None of the above.
That's right. Kumeyaay Indians have been here for 12,000 years, and that's older than all of those ancient civilizations.
Well, yeah, they lived in caves and wore beads, had long hair.
Kind of like you.
So they were the original hippies, actually.
Does that describe you, gray feathers?
That's me all over.
Okay, next question. Where would you find a life-size statue of a mastodon in East County?
Some museum?
No.
Is it the Heritage of the Americas Museum, Grossmont College, the Anza Borrego Desert, or the Republican Party headquarters?
Anza Borrego, I've seen him.
You got it.
It's so strange to be driving out in the desert and all of a sudden here's this gigantic mastodon or mammoth or
That's
wild
right.
horse.
You
and
wrote about a book. Okay, last question here now. The new owner of Hakumba Hot Springs also bought something else unusual. Actually, two other things unusual, so we'll give you a bonus if you can get them both. What else does he own?
I know the answer.
I know the answer, too. So let's
and it's the bare
pass
truth.
It on to Lynn.
I was going
to
say a pool cleaner. I mean,
No, it's a very natural answer. Yes.
A lake, a glider port, a winery.
Clothes.
Clothes. Clothes, that's a hint.
A clothing optional resort?
Yes. He owns a clothing optional resort, De Anza Resort. And one more thing.
The town of Hakumba Hot Springs.
That's right.
Wow. But you will be able to keep your clothes on when you go to visit. It will not be clothing optional. And this concludes another wild and crazy session of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Yeehaw.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interest, not special interest. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member of www.eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the Local Government Report. An environmental group has lodged a formal complaint over a proposed electronic billboard in Santee, contending that the sign violates city laws and further should require environmental review. The LED-powered video billboard proposed by a Toyota dealership would stand 70 feet tall and be 321 square feet on each side. It would tower above the junction of Highways 125 and 52. The city found that no environmental review is required, but now Scenic San Diego, a nonprofit group dedicated to preserving scenic views, has filed a formal objection. The group says the project directly violates city codes, which specifically prohibit flashing signs except for time and temperature information. The sign is also 26 feet taller than allowed by current law and nearly four times the square footage. The group say that studies have also found digital billboards contribute to driver distraction and could endanger motorists. The location includes views over the San Diego River Park and Mission Trails, with distant views of Cuyamaca and the Laguna Mountains. Van Collingsworth, with Preserve Wild Santee, voiced this concern. The billboard would get quite a setting to stick up its sore thumb, he said, then asked, and how many more would follow?
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ's East County Magazine show, and my newsmaker today is Aaron Hunt with the California Wolf Center in Julian. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
This facility has done an amazing job of bringing back from near extinction a particular breed of wolf. We're going to tell you more about that later. There are several thousand gray wolves across the United States today, but Erin is here with some very troubling news today. She's going to tell us about a National Day of Action on August 14th to stand up for gray wolves because the federal government's U.S. Department of Interior and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are pushing to delist gray wolves from protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Erin, tell us what's happening.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing to delist gray wolves throughout the lower 48 states.
So they would no longer be endangered or even on the threatened list. What would happen?
Management would be handed over to each individual state where wolves are found, and the states have various different attitudes towards gray wolves. Some of them are opposed to having gray wolves in their states. So this proposal, if it goes through, has the potential to put the brakes on wolf recovery. Wolf recovery is one of the most successful endangered species recovery efforts in our nation's history, and we believe it would be premature to remove protections for gray wolves at this time.
This could even open the door to hunting them by helicopters, as we've seen done in Alaska with Alaskan gray wolves, correct?
Well, there are areas of this country that have excellent wolf habitat, but either have very small populations of gray wolves or don't have any populations of gray wolves. So to consider wolves recovered in areas where they're not even found is premature. So it would prevent wolves from recolonizing those areas that have good habitat. In the areas where we do have healthy populations of wolves, most likely effect would be to reduce those populations and potentially even eliminate populations.
Now, one of the most disturbing aspects of this story is an interview that you have done with a scientist, Dr. Vucetich, who was one of 16 scientists whose work was cited to try to justify this proposal for the delisting. And yet he and these other scientists have now signed a letter critiquing the arguments and saying that the federal government is effectively stacking the deck of what should be an independent peer review process and excluding those scientists who are really the top wolf experts. What can you tell us about your findings from your interview with Dr. Vucetich?
Well, this is a big concern because the way science works is that experts, peers, must review other scientists' work. That's how science gets better. It's how we find new information and how we continually improve.
Correct.
So to tell scientists that, no, you can't make judgments and you can't critique another scientist's work is exactly the opposite of the way science is supposed to function. In this particular case, it's potential evidence of stacking the deck against science. If an independent peer review panel is handpicked and scientists who have opinions that they have expressed that have been against delisting gray wolves, and they're excluded from this peer review panel, it gives the impression that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is trying to handpick experts that will support their case for delisting instead of experts who will give an honest and well-qualified evaluation of U.S. Fish and Wildlife's
proposal. Very, very troubling. What is fueling this? Are there special interests at play that are trying to get the wolves eradicated?
Well, wolves are a very polarizing species. They invoke passionate support, but they also evoke fear and anger sometimes. We are not about continuing the wolf wars mentality. You know, we're really trying to find common ground and solutions. So, we don't necessarily like to point to anyone to kind of place blame anywhere in particular. But what we are trying to do is to share the facts about wolves and to share the facts about this delisting proposal and to ask people to speak up and to tell U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that they want gray wolves to remain on the landscape for future generations.
Now, you've mentioned that you were trying
trying to work with ranching interests, for example, to sort of put your money where your mouth is and give them some examples of ways that livestock and wolves can coexist. Can you give us some examples?
Yes. A core part of our mission is providing funding for coexistence measures. These are things that prevent conflicts between wolves and human activities, and that includes livestock grazing. Many of the techniques that we fund are designed to prevent conflicts before they occur, and each time we're successful preventing those conflicts, it increases tolerance for wolves and other wild predators on the landscape. Some of the specific examples are funding range riders. These are people who go out and they can be with the livestock. They create a human presence in that area. And because wolves are naturally shy around humans, that alone is enough to deter them from entering an area where livestock may be grazing. We also fund fladry. That's a visual deterrent that keeps wolves from entering an area. Predator-proof fencing, which excludes predators from an area where you may be housing livestock. Livestock guardian dogs, and some creative and technologically advanced husbandry techniques that end up resulting in healthier livestock and preventing those conflicts.
Now, there's a national poll, I understand, that shows support for protecting the wolves.
Absolutely. The majority of U.S. citizens support wolf recovery. There are some vocal opponents to wolf recovery, but we're encouraging people who, if you are one of those majority of Americans who supports wolf recovery, you have an opportunity through September 11th, 2013, to provide public comment to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
That's very important. Let's repeat that. There is a deadline for public comment on this of September 11th, and you can find a link for how to submit your public comments at the California Wolf Recovery Center website, which is?
It's www.californiawolfcenter.org. You have a chance to stand up for wolves and tell U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that the job is not done.
Okay, and you can also, we'll be posting that also at the www.eastcountymagazine.org site as well. Wednesday, August 14th is a National Day of Public Action to Protect Wolves. Tell us what you have in mind for that.
A large number of conservation organizations have come together to partner to organize this National Day of Action, August 14th. And we're asking everyone to wear gray, talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, feel free to howl, but let people know that wolves are important. They have an important role in our environment, and you can take that opportunity to tell not just your friends and neighbors, but also the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that wolf recovery is important and the job is not done.
Yes. Now, as we've mentioned, there are several thousand gray wolves across the continental United States. This delisting would delist them in all 48 lower states, which is quite astonishing. One bright spot is that the Mexican gray wolf has been excluded from that delisting, and this is one of the species that you're working with at your facility in Julian. Tell us about your efforts there.
The Mexican gray wolf is the most genetically distinct subspecies, and they are the rarest. There are only about 75 of them alive in the wild today.
And at one point it was down to seven, right?
We got within seven unrelated individuals of that subspecies being extinct. The only reason we have Mexican gray wolves alive on the landscape today is because of captive breeding efforts of facilities like the California Wolf Center. So we host and breed Mexican gray wolves in captivity, and some of our individuals are selected for release into the wild. They're being released into Arizona and New Mexico.
How successful has that been? Have they been protected and kept safe once they were released?
Well, they've been protected, but human-caused mortality is still the number one threat to the survival of Mexican gray wolves. So this is still an uphill battle, and the job is certainly not done.
Because the rancher or someone who sees it doesn't know that it's an endangered subspecies, maybe.
Part of the issue is confusion between Mexican gray wolves and coyotes, mm-hmm. although one of the things we try to do is provide educational information to help people identify those two unique mm-hmm. individual mm-hmm. animals. But there is also illegal poaching, hunting, trapping that does cause some mortality for Mexican gray wolves.
So they could stumble into a coyote trap, for example. Now, in California, we don't have any wolves. Is that correct?
Correct. In December of 2011, a wolf named OR7, or nicknamed Journey, crossed from Oregon into California and became our first wild wolf here in almost 90 years.
Wow. So they were here historically.
Yes, absolutely. Wolves are native to the state of California, but they were completely wiped out here in the 1920s. And so OR7's journey into California represents the very beginning stages of wolf recovery here in our home state. And that's one of the main reasons why this delisting proposal is so premature, because we have areas like the Pacific West, which includes California, where wolves are not yet recovered. So to remove federal protections from them puts the brakes on wolf recovery and potentially might prevent wolves from reclaiming areas of excellent wolf habitat where they could survive and could provide those ecological benefits that those top predators
do. Now, let's talk about the ecological benefits of large predators such as wolves. When they're removed from the ecosystem, what are some of the negative things that can happen?
Well, we tend to see their prey species overpopulate.
So deer.
And with wolves in particular, their natural prey are large ungulates or hoofed animals like deer, elk. When these populations grow too large, they tend to overgraze native vegetation. And that impacts habitat that many other species of animals depend on. It impacts the vegetation itself. So we see trees like willow and aspen, in particular riparian or river ecosystems, are negatively affected by overgrazing. It can even impact the water quality.
There you go.
And that has impacts throughout a watershed.
And I would think for ranchers who do use open range lands on, say, Bureau of Land Management land, that actually could mean less foraging material, less grasses for their sheep or cattle to graze on.
It can have impacts there as well. And it's important that people understand that there are ways to coexist. There are ways to have healthy rangeland for livestock to graze, as well as healthy populations of wild ungulates and wild predators.
Now let's talk a little bit about the California Wolf Center, which is right here in Julian. It's an amazing place. Besides the Mexican gray wolves that you actually are breeding there for repopulation in the wild, I understand you also have other wolves and some educational things. Tell us about it.
We do. We have an ambassador pack of Alaskan gray wolves that we keep to help people understand about wolves in the wild. They're ambassadors for wolves in the wild, and they can speak more articulately for wolves than we ever will be able to. So people can come and visit and learn about wolves and the important role that they play in the ecosystem. And certainly cameras are welcome. So education and outreach is something that we do, not just at our conservation center, but throughout the state of California. We're also active in providing this proactive non-lethal funding for techniques that prevent conflicts between wolves and human activities. We host and conduct research to help us better understand wolf behavior, ecology, and what we can better do to protect them in the wild.
Very good. Well, the website again to get more information about how you can visit the California Wolf Center, how you can submit your public comments before September 11th about the proposal to delist wolves from the federal endangered species protection, and also learn more about the August 14th National Day of Action, you can visit www.californiawolfcenter.org. Erin, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
East County provides a rich and varied culinary experience, and the East County Eater is here to tell you all about it. No backcountry bar and grill is too remote. No specialty food restaurant tucked away in some tiny strip mall is too obscure for the Eater. From a Mediterranean bistro in Alpine to sushi in Santee, East County's homegrown dining establishments will surprise and please you. Food is the Eater's obsession, and East County is the Eater's beat. It's hard work, but someone has to do it. Stay tuned. The East County Eater is on the prowl. The longtime standard for the finest Mexican food and ambiance is in East County's Grossmont Center. San Diegans have always considered Casa de Pico the perfect example of Mexican dining. Whenever my relatives showed up from Minnesota and wanted to eat real good Mexican food, I would take them to, where else, Casa de Pico in Old Town. You darn tootin'. Ever since an ownership transfer of Bazar del Mundo compelled Diane Powers to move her fabulous restaurant, La Mesa has been blessed. Old Town's loss is East County's gain. Casa de Pico brought the best of nostalgic Old Town to Grossmont Center, including outdoor patios and flowering bougainvilleas, a friendly cantina, and a spacious indoor dining area decorated with vivid wall murals and folk art. The smell of fresh masa greets you while you watch.
fresh tortillas being handmade the old-fashioned way. My latest visit reminded me that Casa de Pico has elevated food to an art form. Guacamole arrived festooned with olives, tomatoes, cheese curls, and a crown of lettuce, all arranged to resemble una papagayo, a parrot, the perfect complement to a margarita. These are real margaritas, mis amigos, so don't order the grande unless you have a few friends to share. Next came a cheese crisp special, a house specialty for more than 30 years, a crispy flour tortilla topped with refried beans, shredded chicken, beef, or puerco, melted cheese, a generous dollop of sour cream, plus a pinwheel of avocado and tomato slices. For something exciting and different, I sampled the Ensalada Fiesta Tropical, an artfully arrayed salad with oranges, sliced grapes, black olives, miniature sweet peppers, and red chipotle tortilla strips served with sweet yet spicy mango chipotle dressing on a conch-style tortilla shell. Magnifico. Along with Casa de Pico's rebirth came changes. Casa de Pico in Old Town always had a long line to be seated. Not so in La Mesa, where you don't have to compete with tourists. That said, the restaurant was doing such a brisk business that allowing patrons to linger over dessert and Mexican coffee was not a luxury to be afforded at first. Now, if you want to linger after dinner, you'll be delighted to learn that the restaurant has added several postres, desserts, like deep-fried ice cream or sopapillas, puffed pastry topped with cinnamon and honey, to linger over while you sip your café con leche. They even have a new healthy dining menu selection featuring such innovative items as stir-fry Mexican food. Can't get enough of Casa de Pico's fare? No problema. They now offer takeout food and for the next office get-together, fiesta catering. El último is the addition of almuerzos for early risers who crave huevos rancheros to start the day. The rebirth of Casa de Pico in La Mesa brought all of the great things it was known for when it was an old town and made them even better. For festive fun with fabulous food, what more can an aficionado of Mexican cuisine desire? Casa de Pico, 5500 Grossmont Center Drive in La Mesa.
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
Job Talks on KNSJ's East County Magazine show is supported by our listeners and by the San Diego Building Trades Nonprofit Family Housing Corporation, building our future.
We have Tom Lemon here today with us. Tom, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Iris. It's good to be here.
Tom Lemon is the business manager of the San Diego County Building and Construction Trades Council. The council represents over 20 affiliated unions in the construction industry. Tom is here today to talk to us about joint apprenticeship programs in San Diego County.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to telling you a little bit about apprenticeships. In California, there's over 800 apprenticeship programs. In San Diego, there's 20 different apprenticeship programs for construction, and I'm lucky enough to participate in that. So apprenticeship programs are really a pathway to careers. The state of California has a prevailing wage law that says that any project that's funded whole or partially by state funds requires the use of apprentices. So 20% of any project that you see, the guys are all actually learning the trade while they're out there working.
So it sounds like a great on-the-job training opportunity. Can anyone apply for the apprenticeships? And what are the basic requirements for the apprenticeships?
So kind of universally across the board is a high school diploma. And then as you look at the different crafts, the requirements can vary quite a bit from just basically, you know, being able to physically do the work to some higher math skills.
How long is the apprenticeship?
So again, it depends on the craft. So, you know, I'm talking about apprenticeships from plumbers to electricians, from heavy equipment operators to elevator constructors. So each program varies depending on their standards, but 3 to 5 years. And what's really cool about it is it's like going to college because some of them actually you can get your associate's degree and at the same time earn a very substantial wage.
What does the application period involve?
You know, it's like chasing sunsets sometimes. They're so different. Some of my crafts only take them on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. Other crafts you can go in on any day. But all that information I've compiled on the sdbuildingtrades.com website. And if you have an idea of what you'd like to do, you can just go to that, kind of go through all the different programs, over 20 of them, and it'll say when and where and what your requirements, what do you need to bring. So there isn't really a pat answer for that, unfortunately.
How much does an apprentice earn during the program?
It's usually based on the journeyman's wages. So whatever the journeyman's wages, depending on what year apprentice you are, it'll be a percentage of that. Normally, it'll start out about half of what a journeyman makes. And then as you progress through the years, you get about a 10% increase each year until you journeyman out.
How many days a week are classes, and are they always at 9? I'm sure this varies by the trade that you were saying earlier.
Yeah, it does. You know, like when I did my apprenticeship, I actually belonged to a local that's based in Los Angeles that covered San Diego. And I commuted on the weekends for 4 years to Los Angeles to take my courses.
What's the graduation rate on joint apprenticeship programs?
That's a really good question, and I want to make sure you're clear on what a joint apprenticeship program is. A joint apprenticeship program is where the union and the employer both agree to pay for training. So both sides have a real vested interest in success. And because of that, about 92% of all the apprentices in the whole state come from joint labor management programs. 95% of women and people of color come from our programs. So we're really, the name of the game is joint labor management. And then if you look nationally at training overall, a statistic that's just mind-boggling is that the number one spender of money on training is the U.S. military. The number two is joint labor management apprenticeship programs.
Is it true that upon graduation that one can go anywhere in the United States and be qualified to work in the trade that they're trained in?
Not just the United States, but also in Canada. Most of our unions are international unions. And once you get that journeyman's card or ticket, as we call it, I think some of the crafts call it a book, you can go anywhere. And the employer knows when you show up with a journeyman's card that you're ready to go. You know, he can just tell you, go do the job, and the job will get done right the first time.
Can you give us a brief description on how these programs are particularly serving East County residents?
Well, for the folks out in East County, they can tell by all the pickup trucks driving around that there's a lot of folks in construction. And really, if, at the end of the day, when you want to learn a trade, the best way to learn it is through an apprenticeship program. So there's lots of folks in the building trades that are East County residents. And it's open to everyone throughout the county, not just the East County, though.
Are the apprenticeship programs open to older adults?
It's open to everyone. There's a bit of a competition to become an apprentice. You take a test, you take an interview, they score you. Young kids right out of high school qualify, and folks out of the military, we have a special program, Helmets to Hard Hats, that creates pathways to construction for our military vets, as well as adults who decide to change careers.
That's great, because so many folks are finding that they have to have second careers nowadays, so that sounds like it's a really great opportunity for all age groups. What is the demand for skilled construction workers?
Well, there's always going to be a demand for skilled construction workers. Unfortunately, right now, with the economy just getting back on its feet, it's not as strong as it has been in the past. But the current workforce is aging. And there's a lot of guys out there that are like me in their 50s that are looking for an exit strategy, which just creates more and more opportunities for the young folks coming up.
Tom Lemon, I thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks so much, Iris.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Rebecca Williamson running up the wildest jobs in East County. Now here's the buzz. Beekeeping is making a comeback here. Honey was once one of the top crops in East County. In the 1800s, local honey was shipped to Europe, where it was prized for its flavor and health benefits. Recently, bees have been disappearing across the United States. No one is sure why. Theories range from pesticides to genetically modified crops to global warming. But now, some determined folks are working to help bring back our bees. Today, we're here with Dragon Juric with Bee Happy. He's going to help us all about the bee revival in our region. Dragon, what are some of the benefits that bees bring to us?
Well, the human development of planet Earth, the way that we know it, it wouldn't be possible without the bees. And that's because the bees are the one that pollinize the flowers and the trees that we have, the fruits, all the crops that we harvest every year. So the flowers, the reason that the flowers grow, one is for the beauty, for us to enjoy it. And the second part is to attract the pollinators. So this is the main reason, the pollinization of the flowers. And the second part is what the bees produce, and that is honey, pollen, royal jelly, propolis, and wax.
That is a benefit. And how difficult is it to raise bees?
Well, it's not difficult at all if you know what you're doing, if you have the proper equipment, and if you're willing to learn.
Are local laws changing to make it easier to become a beekeeper?
Yes. In 2012, San Diego just passed a new law where you are allowed to have two beehives in the city of San Diego.
Can you tell us how to raise bees in East County?
The city of San Diego has the easiest rules, and that's 15 feet from your neighbor. But if you live in different communities like El Cajon, La Mesa, Escondido, they all have different regulations, and the best way is to go and contact the city of one of these, Escondido or El Cajon or East County, wherever you live, and they will give you the information on the beekeeping and how far the beehives need to be from your neighbors.
What if someone has bees they don't want in their attic, for example?
This is not the place where you would want, and anybody would want, the bees in the attic, so those bees need to be removed.
And how can people get bees removed?
Well, the bee removal, it's a complex situation. My company removes the bees alive, and that's the goal here. We're educating people about the importance of the bees and why is it important to remove them alive and not kill them. So it's a complex process where the honeycomb and the total family needs to be removed and requeened. And that is because of the Africanized bees. The problem with the aggressive bees, you don't want to have aggressive bees in your neighborhood, and you should be careful dealing with the aggressive bees.
Can this job be dangerous? Are you worried about Africanized killer bees that have made their way into our region?
Well, the job is dangerous only if you present a danger to the bees. The bees are very docile creatures, and they will not attack you unless they are threatened or you go and you mess with them. So yes, you should not play with the bees, and you should not go and disturb them.
Where can people buy locally made honey?
The best place to buy honey, and you should know your source of honey, because there's a lot of honey that comes from different parts of the world where they fake the honey. They mix the honey with the syrups and all kinds of additives. So the best place to buy honey is from your local beekeeper. Farmers markets are the best places. Or beekeepers like me, we sell honey and royal jelly and bee pollen and other bee products.
Where can people get more information?
More information you can find at the San Diego Beekeeper Society. We have a large group of members. There's about more than 700 members. There's a free to join for anybody. It costs $20 a year, and you can come and listen to different topics. There's different people that come about different things. There's local beekeepers or website. That's also another good way to learn about bees. So for more information, you can go to SanDiegoBeekeeperSociety.com, or you can contact me directly at BeeHappy, 619-675-2636.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection,
and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.